You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
Good morning, a very warm welcome, and an unexpectedly warm Belgium and Brussels. I have to say it feels more like as if we're in the monsoon season of India. But hey, there you are. It is still welcome that it's warm, even though it's wet. However, that won't be the case for this particular conversation and this debate. My name is Dharmendra Kanani. I've been really pleased to be appointed the new executive director at Friends of Europe as of October, and I'm your moderator for this morning. We're here today to officially launch this, really. It's the report that the Bible and particular forecast on where gas is going into the future. And really, as we say in the title of our event this morning, what next for natural gas? And we have an illustrious panel of speakers for you this morning to hopefully generate a conversation that's more insight, thought, and potential influence of solutions and policy implications rather than just hot air. And I hope that I can help navigate us through that conversation to ensure we can get there. But we have a substantive contribution to kick us off first from Fateh Birol, who you'll all know from the agency, the International Energy Agency. That's a well-known character and face of our events over the past 5 years. But just by way of introduction and framing our conversation, I'm not a gas expert by any means, but I'm a citizen and I'm a consumer, and I've watched and heard a lot around issues around energy. I'm struck by the fact that this conversation happens a week before the energy summit that takes place in Brussels next week, and possibly 2 weeks, just under 2 weeks before the Brexit debate. I'm not sure anyone's raised the question about whether Brexit will have an impact on gas, but let's see. There's a lot of gas happening in the UK at the moment anyway. But I mean, it's quite an important occasion to have this conversation. But it occurs to me there are a number of things that affect this conversation and this dialogue. One is that as a commodity, it's quite odd that this particular issue, gas, doesn't seem to respond to the normal laws of supply and demand. We have incredibly high levels of capacity. We have very low demand, and it seems that this issue is not subject to the normal laws governing supply and demand. I'm sure Fateh will pick up on this, in the sense that there's an absence of a direct link between demand and prices on the impact of cheap gas. I think the other framing point is the EU's gas package, and in particular, the desire to ensure the security in place, neighbourliness, i.e. in the sense that actually in the context of a crisis, that there's sharing of resources and to ensure that no household goes without, but also to ensure different and more effective types of contracts that are in place in Europe as well. But there's been a lot of controversy about this package in terms of creating a different kind of regulatory infrastructure. The other, I think, framing point is infrastructure per se. There's been a whole slew of investments in LNG, which are creating a very different type of impact in terms of the marketplace, but also what we do with all that gas in the future. Linked to the final point, which is about the decarbonisation agenda. We have a target post-Paris, and actually it's quite interesting to know how this report and the contents of it affects our global commitment to get to a point of being decarbonized by 2050 to a certain percentage. So I think that's the framing for this conversation, which I'll pick up on afterwards. But without further ado, let me hand you over to Fateh Birol to give us a sense of what the contents of this report. Thank you much. Very, very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much to Friends of Europe once again inviting us here, and thank you very much to all of you for coming here in such a crowded group. Thank you very much for your interest in our work. You know, at the IEA we look at all the fuels: gas, oil, renewables, coal, nuclear, And gas is one of those fuels that you cannot look in isolation of the what happens to other fuels. So therefore, what happens with coal, what happens with renewables, with nuclear, with climate policies, as our moderator said, they all affect the gas markets. And we just finished our gas market report, which looks at the next 5 years. What do we expect? What are the challenges? What are the opportunities for gas? And our moderator mentioned the climate change. It may well be an opportunity together with air pollution for gas in order to increase market share. We look at all of them, and we made this. We just finished this report. In fact, my colleague, Ms. Costanza Giacosia, is with us. She's the main author of this book. She knows everything in and out, and if we have some questions, and please don't come to me, go to her. She's the one who knows all the numbers. I wanted to thank especially to Mr. Dominic Ristori for coming here and giving us the privilege to bring the EU perspective, what are EU's thoughts, preoccupation as far as gas is concerned, especially the recent efforts in terms of the infrastructure development and regulation. I think it is very important to note. And also thank you to our colleagues from representatives of Statoil of NG for coming here and corresponding our requests. Now, I will give you a brief outlook of some of the findings of our report and tell you what we expect in the next 5 years. Some, I think, 4 years ago, we published a report, and we are always now the slaves of the title of that report, the Golden Age of Gas. So we are always asked, are we entering a Golden Age of Gas? We said in that report, that report was titled, Are We Entering a Golden Age of Gas? Question mark. Okay, so we are going to also in this report answer some of the questions we raised in that report. First, let me start with demand. In the last 6 years, we have seen a strong growth in demand, about 2.5%, and in the next 6 years, we expect the growth in demand is much slower. It's 1.5%, and the main reason for that is, as I said, the competition. Coal, gas prices, we will talk about gas prices are low, but coal prices are rock bottom, especially in Asia. And when you don't have a regulation, especially for air pollution, coal may be the preferred option with all its consequences. And I will tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, which I highlighted last week in a clean energy ministerial meeting in San Francisco. Today, one-third of the coal power plants built today are subcritical power plants, which means their efficiency is extremely low, and we are locking in our future 50 years to those subcritical coal-fired power plants. So on one hand, gas experiences pressure from cheap coal, especially in Asia. On the other hand, the falling down of the cost of renewables and government support for renewables squeezes the room for natural gas in many countries. Therefore, we expect the gas demand growth still growing, and among the all fossil fuels, the only one which increases this market share, but the rate of growth is slowing down. If you look at a bit the countries and the regions, we have experienced, as I said, 2.5%. It was a strong growth coming from U.S., Middle East, China, and we have experienced a big decline in the last 5 years in Europe. And in the next years to come, the biggest growth is going to come from China, we expect. Followed by Middle East, India, and Europe. With Europe, even though we see a recovery of gas, which is, in my view, good news, because a big chunk of it is due to the replacement of the retirement of coal-fired power plants. We just finished a fresh analysis, and I can tell you that we expect about one-third of the existing coal in Europe will retire in the next 10 years. There is a strong window of opportunity for gas and also for renewables and for the others. Even though the electricity demand growth is not very strong, the fact that one-third of the, about 70 gigawatts of the coal is retiring opens a door for gas to increase market share. But having said that, the push for renewables mean that the growth is still slow in Europe. And with our numbers, even in 2021, European gas consumption will be 13% less than before crisis, 2007. So 2021, gas consumption is still 13% lower than 2007, before we hit the financial crisis. In US, we have seen a major penetration of gas replacing coal, which was the main reason, not the only, but the main reason, why U.S. emissions declined so substantially. Okay? Big drop. Gas made a major, brought a major benefit to U.S. carbon footprint by replacing coal, also thanks to the Obama administration regulations, but plus the gas prices being cheap. But why do we expect in the next years the gas demand growth in the U.S. slows down? Because not much substitution possibilities of coal is left. That's number one. Second, renewables again coming very strongly supported by government. So China, I was saying, China is a major driver of global gas demand growth we expect. And here, mainly, coal replaced by gas, coal power plants replaced by natural gas. Here, I wanted to bring, there are many colleagues who work on gas on a day-to-day basis. I think the gas industry is rightly so, focusing on the climate change issues and impacts and the role of gas to address the climate change. But maybe, there is a need to look at the role of gas more closely in terms of addressing the local air pollution. This is a major issue. This is a real issue. I can tell you, I was raised in Ankara, and I was till a certain age, I was playing football in the street. And Stefan Singer is coming; he is also a football fan from Hamburg. So I can tell you that when it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon, my mother called me and my brother back home to stop playing football because the pollution was the highest. You couldn't breathe because of the lignite. Now, it was switched in the last years because we were playing in the street. It was in the last few years, there was a substitution of coal by natural gas, and there is almost no problem now. Gas cleaned up the air pollution. Even though now in the streets you cannot play football, there's a lot of cars there, this is another story. But gas has a key role to address local pollution, and as IEA, we are going to this month, 28th of June, we are going to release a major report, the first report in the world, as far as I know, role of energy in addressing the air pollution, what kind of policies we can take there. So China's drive comes from the air pollution regulation, and the gas will mainly growing from that direction. Looking at the now the production, there is a shift here. In the last 5 years, we have seen, in addition to U.S. shale gas revolution, we have seen the Russia, Qatar, their production growing substantially. But in the next 5 years or so, we expect Australia, together with the United States, will be responsible more than half of the global gas production growth. This is important to note because, as I will show you in a minute, it will have implications for everybody, including Europe. Two countries, lots of gas, especially in terms of LNG, and AAA market economies, and they will be the driver, whereas the traditional producers, such as Russia and Qatar, their production will be at a low level. For the perhaps one thing about the U.S. gas production, to make take a photo of 2016, for the first time, we will be seeing that the U.S. gas production for 1 year, only 16, there will be a decline in the U.S. gas production. Afterwards, it will increase. The reason 2016 there will be such a drop is because of the prices, both for gas prices and also for the low oil prices linked to associated gas production. Now, coming to Europe and the European prices. Now, one of the findings of the report that Costanza put together is that we are at the start of a new chapter in the European gas market, especially in terms of prices. Because what is happening is that we expect that the U.S. LNG exports may well play a role in terms of the price competition in Europe. According to our numbers today, gas, the LNG can land to Northwest Europe from United States about a price around $4 per MBTU currently, roughly. And more importantly, when we look at the future, we see that there is a reason that the traditional pipeline exporters may need to look at their strategies a bit more carefully. Why? For the following reason. We expect, as the IEA, as we were saying since January, when the oil prices were $30, we said we expect oil prices to increase. And today we have $50, and we believe that end of this year and 2017, we will see more rebalancing of the oil markets. So upward pressure on the oil prices. What does it mean? It means that the increasing oil prices means the contracts which are indexed to oil prices will increase as well. Number one. Number two, increase of the oil prices mean in the United States increase of oil production, which in turn will have an impact on the associated gas production, which will put a ceiling on the price increase in the U.S. gas prices. So therefore, putting these two things together, U.S. price developments vis-a-vis the oil index prices, U.S. gas option becomes a factor in the competition in the European markets. Of course, it is not only thanks to the US that we are going to see perhaps more competition in Europe. It is also thanks to the work that our colleagues are doing in Commission in terms of pushing the infrastructure development that you can buy gas somewhere in the East Europe Netherlands, and also the regulation to make the Europe much more flexible, the markets, making the hands of the consumers much more stronger. Therefore, I believe the traditional major gas exporters to Europe may now need to give a second look at their strategy and maybe adopt a strategy which could also increase their competitiveness in terms of the prices. Otherwise, we may well see that they may lose market share if the pricing strategy does not change. Moving to LNG, as I said, the very good news, unlike the before, we are expecting in the next years to come a huge growth coming from Australia and United States. About 90% of the growth in LNG comes from these two countries. And this will help to the diversification of the energy markets, good for the gas security, a major preoccupation for the IEA, and also good for the making the gas markets much more globalized. While we see a change in the suppliers to LNG markets, we also see a change in the importers of LNG as well. We have seen in the past Japan and Korea being the major importers, but we are going to experience, we believe, coming from China and also India. India, ladies and gentlemen, some of you may have noticed, made recently an important reform in terms of gas markets, which made the gas pricing more flexible compared to past. And I wouldn't be surprised if our India demand numbers in our next gas market report will be upward revised, both as a result of the reforms and the strong growth of India. Now, while we have a lot of gas coming to the markets, it's very good news, and we are going to see a few years with a lot of gas, rather weak demand. Therefore, gas prices will be under pressure. So next few years, we do not expect a strong increase in the natural gas prices across the world. So 4 or 5 years, they will be under pressure. Having said that, this is an important challenge for all of us, at least we think so as the IEA, to think that, therefore, gas security is not anymore a problem. In general, of any commodity, it could be oil or gas, when the prices go up, suddenly we think it is important to secure. When the prices are low, we think there is no security problem. And these strategic issues are, in many cases, are forgotten. Therefore, we thought that we should remind everybody in our report that the gas security remains an important issue. There are many in the few years, last year, cross-border supply cuts, the one the Russia, Ukraine, again, Mr. Ristori and his team work on that issue a lot. there are, we have experienced terrorist attacks in many LNG exporting countries, Algeria, Egypt, Yemen, Nigeria. These are important LNG exporters, and the significant amount of LNG capacities out of service now as a result of the terrorist attacks, another important issue. Another security concern is, of course, natural disasters. This is, it can be anything. We have seen the what happened in Japan and what are the implications of that on the energy markets, and we have seen the Katrina hurricane in the United States. Again, implications, natural disasters don't come with a warning. And we have also technical disruptions in many cases, as well as some new energy security challenges arise, such as the cyber security, which increases the vulnerability of our energy system. So therefore, as IEA, we have decided, our ministers decided, IEA, as you know, we look after the oil security for the IEA member countries, but our ministers decide IEA has a new mandate to build a system to look after the gas security, and this has been consolidated in the leaders summit in Japan, the G7 summit, and G7 leaders asked the IEA to build a system to look after the gas security, and I think this will be definitely a complementary system, especially in the context of Europe, what the Commission is doing today, but you will hear from us a lot in terms of our gas security efforts. When we say the gas security, one area I thought I should bring to your attention, investments, before finishing my words. Now, we have seen until 2014, about each year, 35, on average, 35 BCM FID for the new LNG export capacity. 35 BCM, on average, it was very decent, but in 2015, those FIDs are halved. First signal, this is the yellow light. Why I say yellow light? Because the red light is coming. As of 1st of June 2016, the first 6 months, the FIDs, the amount of all FIDs for the new LNG export capacity was literally zero. Completely no role, no new FIDs are sanctioned, and this is an area that we need to pay attention for the future markets, LNG markets. We know that there is a lot of LNG today in the markets, but there are colleagues who are going to speak after me from industry. They know much better than me, and there are many industry colleagues. When there is a problem in the market, then when you take a decision, I started a new project, it takes many years that you start to gas to come to the markets. So current zero level of the investment is an important area to be worried today. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me finish my words by trying to put our thoughts together. We see a change in the gas markets. Now, production growth is driven by Australia and United States. Russia and Qatar are taking a back seat in terms of the gas production growth, and the demand growth is driven by China, India, and Middle East countries. A major economic and maybe geopolitical implication of a new supply coming to markets is that the traditional exporters will be under pressure. Some of them, a few years ago, didn't expect or didn't agree that the shale gas could play a role in the global gas markets. I think that denial is behind us. But now the second phase would be, what are the strategies to deal with the new natural gas landscape? Third, we expect that the LNG exports, US, Australia, will make the gas markets more and more global, and this export capacity growth means, as I said before, gas prices will be under pressure. And an area that is of concern to us and perhaps some of the gas companies around this table in this room, investments are going down substantially. 15 halved, 16 zero by now. And when we need gas, and we think, as the IEA, we will need gas for many years to come, because in all of our scenarios, gas is the only fossil fuel whose share is increasing, even in a climate-constrained world. So therefore, the investment going down is definitely something to be concerned about, even though there is a strong growth coming renewable energies, especially from wind and solar. We think there is definitely room for natural gas in the global energy mix, in electricity generation, industry, and elsewhere. Finally, as I mentioned again, we are, as the IEA, taking a new mandate, and we will improve our work, enhance our work on gas and gas security, as requested us by the G7 Leaders Summit in Japan, and by our ministers at the IEA ministerial meeting. There will be different forms of how we are going to enhance our work, but one of them I can tell you, in order to put Constanza under pressure, this report, which we publish on an annual basis, given the fact that the gas market needs more information, more objective information and data, we may well have gas market reports coming more frequently than once a year, and perhaps we will have the opportunity to meet with you, discuss with you, and learn from you more than once a year. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Fatih. Your presentation, as ever, is very, very useful, effective, and I think from a lay perspective, raises some really serious policy, regulatory, and financial market challenges, I think, over the period of the next 5 years. But what does beg the question in my mind, which I'm sure others may have, is that if we know now what we do now in this context of what we're looking ahead, when we think about the choices and the options that were taken 5 years before, in particular, would we do things dramatically different? And I think that's a big question that strategically that we need to think about into the future. But let me move from the International Energy Agency to our European Commission. It gives me a great pleasure to invite Dominic Ristori to the podium to reflect on what he's heard and give a perspective from the European Commission. Dominic, over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dharmendra. I would like, first of all, to express my thanks to Friends of Europe for organizing this event, and I am delighted to see again the quality of your report, Fatih. This report is arriving at the right time, again. And let me also congratulate Costanza and your team. And first of all, in introduction, I would like to underline also again the quality of our relationship between the European Commission and the International Energy Agency. We need this cooperation in order to base our policy on evidence, on modeling, on the quality of analysis. This is fundamental. And in that context, I am also pleased to let you know that we have strongly supported the development of competencies of International Energy Agency. This is valid for all things, because this organization has not only an impressive expertise regarding oil, but also an impressive expertise regarding gas, regarding energy security, regarding energy efficiency. And as a consequence, we can rely on your production, your report, not only as the European Commission, but also now more and more in all important energy forums. You refer rightly to the G7, and we spoke a lot around gas and LNG in particular, but it will be the same at the end of the month in the context of the G20 in Beijing. And we would like to prolong the work done on energy efficiency. And it was the same just last week in San Francisco when clean energy technology was at the top of the priorities. Now, coming back to your report, I would like to make some comments regarding, in particular, our three priorities: energy security, competitiveness, and sustainability. And let me say first, it would be impossible to present new strategy on gas without taking fully into account the key evolution on global market. You rightly point the main changes. Gas markets are not remaining immobile, as probably it was largely the case during some of the last decades. Gas market is changing, as it's changing fast. And this is also a message and a signal, and I share your views regarding the need to maintain energy security for gas as a top priority. And it is exactly why we have proposed a new energy security package at the beginning of this year, mid of February. And as you know, we have decided to develop transparency of gas contracts, public and private, because this is a necessity and the lesson learned from the crisis Russia-Ukraine and from the gas stress test we organized in 2014. But we decided also to develop solidarity, to translate the concept of solidarity in the Article 194 of the treaty in realities. And one lesson from the most recent crisis is we cannot limit solidarity at national level. And we should shift from national to regional level in order to ensure the delivery of gas, in particular for social services, hospitals, schools, and domestic clients. And we decided also, and we receive a mandate for that from our leaders, to ensure a full compatibility between all intergovernmental agreements and EU community acquis. And this is fundamental, because as you know, many of present IGA are not compatible with EU legislation. Many said at the beginning, you are too ambitious, the political consensus is not there, you will be confronted to big difficulties. This is not the case. When we discussed that at the level of COREPER, and more recently at the level of Energy Council, last Monday in Luxembourg, we finished with a complete agreement regarding the importance of ex-ante assessment developed by the European Commission in contact with member states in order to ensure full compatibility between IGA and EU legislation. And I am very pleased to see that all countries, those very ambitious of that, Poland, but also the others, Hungary, supported our proposal on that. And only few months after the presentation of our proposal. This is important to promote because some in different forums are only explaining bad things and bad news or conveying bad news regarding the situation of Europe. We can develop important policies in Europe, including addressing the most sensitive issues in a positive way, and energy policy is a clear demonstration of that. Accordingly, regarding energy security for gas, this will remain at the top of our priorities, and I am convinced with what we are doing now, including our recent strategy for LNG, we discussed in the context of the G7, and I am pleased to see that other countries, including Japan, are following this model, will represent a new chance for increasing our level of security, not only using the present capacity we have in Spain, in France, for example, but also completing the infrastructure in the more vulnerable areas in the Baltic or in Central and Southeast Europe, and organizing better the corridor north-south, and using fully this new panorama we have in front of us, with more producers, new producers, the progress made in US, in Australia is spectacular. And again, last year, nobody expected a so important change regarding US finishing with restriction to export. We had a summit on energy recently in Washington, co-chaired by John Kerry on the US side, and it was very clear. The number of licenses for export will increase significantly from US to Europe. And this will be good, of course, for our security. But this will be good also for competitiveness. During decades, we have been confronted to a scenario based on physical infrastructure and sometimes with the main suppliers in situation to dictate the prices different from one client to another client, very different, and to dictate also destination clause and sometimes also other things not acceptable in the context of our democracies and our market. Accordingly, we should use fully, as one of the most important, we are the most important importer of gas in the world. The European gas market is representing a lot, more than 400 billion cubic metrics. And this will remain during many years. And we will have to import even more in the short term because of the declining internal production we have in UK and more recently in the Netherlands, in particular in Groningen, as you know very well. Accordingly, with the new development of new infrastructure, for example, the floating terminal, less expensive, we can progress even more rapidly regarding security and competitiveness. And look the situation. I was in Vilnius at the end of last year. With Klaipėda floating terminal, prices have gone down but more than 20% 2 months after the terminal was operational. These are clear lessons regarding what we should do and we should do more. And of course, we should also fully take into account new potential of market for gas. Not only regarding the power sector, you refer to, with some decline of nuclear and coal. But also, we should use more gas for heavy transport by road or maritime transport, in particular for freight transport. I was in Spain recently for the inauguration of a new logistic chain regrouping all Spanish ports but oriented to the use of LNG. And you know, after the COP21 in Paris, it will be more important than ever to organize the things between new link between electricity and gas in the context of power sector, but also we will have to manage, to have a clever management of the degressive use of coal. This will be fundamental in order to reduce emissions at the level expected. And as you know, you refer to the situation, Fatih, of US. Nobody expected a so important gas boom in the US. In 5 years, they reached quasi more than 50% of the world US production, but with one key effect, a massive reduction of emissions because of a replacement from coal to gas. And in Europe, as you know, we have still many countries using a lot of coal. And not only Poland. We have to assist and help Poland to manage this energy transition. But we have also Germany, 45% of electricity generation in Germany is coming from lignite and brown coal, and many other countries. Accordingly, one additional signal will be oriented to the more compatibility between gas and climate change and gas and renewable too. Because as you know, including in the context of European energy internal market, we will need backup in order to ensure security in the market with an increasing amount of renewables for electricity generation. More than 60% of new installed capacity are oriented to renewables presently. It's a good thing, but at the same time, we should pay attention to this aspect in order to put in place the relevant regulatory framework, going also into the right direction in terms of practical and realistic implementation of COP21. These are my main comments at this stage. I thank you very much for your report.
Thank you very much. Can I ask the other speakers to come and join me on the panel now, please? Dominic, thank you. That was highly interesting. And the question that I'm sure may come from the audience is that do we need a gas chapter on TTIP? But let's see. I'm sure that'll be a big issue for people to be considering, given what you've said about America and America's role in production of gas and export. Let's now turn our attention away from the agency, international agency, the commission, but to industry. And very pleased to invite Philippe Junot, who's special advisor to the senior executive vice president at ENGIE, to say a few words about what you've heard have in terms of implications for European utilities. What are the implications as a result of current and future gas demand for European utilities?
Well, first, thank you very much for inviting me to provide you with some ideas that can, I hope, feed the debate we will have later on. I would like as well congratulate the IEA for the very interesting report you've issued, and also the EU Commission for the very interesting presentation and statement you've just made. Well, of course, we are in the heart of the debate, and this meeting comes well at a moment where this energy, gas, has come to the crossroad. I would like simply to deliver you four messages which are convictions of my group or idea to discuss together. The first message is that we're absolutely convinced that the gas has a positive role to play in the energy transition now and later. I will not elaborate too much. I think that we will have the opportunity to come back to this issue, but some example. We've identified three main trends, the 3D, as we call them within ENGIE: decarbonization, digitalization, and decentralization. And we think that the role of natural gas in this 3D must be very important, I would say crucial. Natural gas is what we call the next door hero, which will help to manage the ongoing challenges. But unfortunately, most people don't know that. They even see gas as an evil fossil fuel, maybe because they put gas and other fossil energy into the same box. And I think that it's an idea which is wrong and we have to fight against. Global regional scenario, which has been evoked by Dominique Rétori, highlights the role of gas in energy transition. And there are many scenarios, and I think that it's a new fact. There is no global solution. In the developing countries, the major concern for gas is to achieve the switch of coal, especially for polluted urban areas and countries and polluted countries. At the same time, in some islander precarious systems, LNG is the first condition of economic development, as it has been for Japan, for instance. In Europe, gas can rely on its large infrastructures network to guarantee supply, security, competitiveness, and sustainable development, which are the three pillars of the EU energy policy. So, energy transition will be a worldwide reality, but in each of this region, the forms would be probably different. Second idea, natural gas is first the low-hanging fruit to tackle climate change. Secondly, gas is full of innovation, potential innovation, to build the future energy system. And third, gas can be renewable in itself for any type of use. Most cost-effective quick win solution to tackle CO2, I think that it's not necessary to demonstrate it. Using gas natural instead of other fossils allows to improve the air quality. Gas is an innovative energy. Many current innovations will make gas an energy able to compete with other renewable in decarbonization, digitalization, and decentralization. I won't come back on the 3Ds. We could discuss about it later. There are new uses of natural gas toward energy efficiency. These new uses has been developed. Gas equipment will meet technology breakthrough to foster energy efficiency with, for instance, heat pump, micro combined heat and power, including fuel cell, etc. Green mobility. Green mobility is, we think, an important point as well. Well, electric cars are developing fast, and it's really a good but limited solution. That's why natural gas is meant to become the complementary solution with CNG for light and medium duties vehicle, and for high duties and long haul vehicles such as trucks, trains, or vessels. A couple of words about renewable gas. Well, we believe within NG in biogas, and we think that it could be a real renewable solution in the future. We could allow to continue to use existing network. Third ideas, gas infrastructures, I'm coming to the infrastructures, are the cornerstone of optimized energy systems. Well, it means that we must switch from a partial approach of the energy sector, which consider power, gas, and heat individually, to a systemic one. And the best illustration of this systemic approach is a combination between gas and power. Natural gas owns another strong economic advantage. Within the major part of OECD countries, network has sufficiently developed to plan an increasing role, to play an increasing role of gas without major new investments. We should indeed consider that for the same investment, gas networks enable to transport 5 times higher capacity than power networks. Fourth and last idea, new policy frameworks is needed. I won't elaborate, but clear and coherent signals from energy and tax policy is needed. And moving, I've just said that, from partial regulations to systemic ones is indispensable. Efforts are needed from all parties and even from the companies, the gas companies, and all the stakeholders. Energy industry should make some effort to modernize and highlight the natural gas image. I'm stopping there because I understand that my micro is going to be switched off.
It is indeed. No, but thank you very much. Thank you very much. It'll be interesting to see how the audience reacts to what you talked about and referred to gas being the low-hanging fruit for sustainability. It'll be interesting to get your reaction about that. But also, you introduced an element which wasn't there in the other presentations about the role of digital, because I'm struck by how digital will affect this agenda in the next 5 to 10 years in particular. But moving swiftly over to Rune Bjørns, who is the Vice President for European Policy and Regulatory Affairs at Statoil. Rune, given what we've heard about demand, and if I quote you correctly, 13.5% 30.5 less demand in Europe in the short term. What, and we've got the growth in LNG investments. What does that mean for your, for you and Norway? And I suppose people might be asking the question, and I ask this provocatively, not for you to answer in this, your presentation, but for people to think about, is Nord Stream 2 really necessary? But leave that as a background point, but tell me how you react to your point around the impact of demand for you.
Yeah, I think there are better people than myself saying something about Nord Stream, but I'll stick to Norway. Anyway, thank you first for two very interesting and inspiring presentations. Yes, we do see a weak market, but even maybe more sort of serious is that we see a volatile market, always difficult for investors. But what gives me comfort even so is that I think the Norwegian production is very competitive. First, because we have a very flexible built-out infrastructure very close to the market. That does not say mean that we like low prices, but we can cope. When it comes to the unpredictability, I think I'll go back to what you said, Fatih, and that is that investments are coming down. It is challenging to ask your board to invest into Europe these days, when there is so much changes, so high volatility. I think we can live in many different worlds as long as we know which one we're living in. And that is part of the challenge, I think. Having said all that, when we look at the European scene, we do not only look at supply demand on an aggregate level, we look at the import needs also, because that is typically demand directed towards exporters into Europe. And here the picture is less bleak, simply because UK production is coming down, and recently, more important, the Dutch production is coming down. I think now the Groningen field is producing approximately 50% of its peak, which also, of course, increases the demand for import. I can also say that recently the Norwegian government prolonged the production profile for the, from the Norwegian continental shelf with another 10 years of stable production. Again, I think we would like to see security of demand and a clear statement. Because what we see now is that one of the unfortunate situations for the gas industry as such is that we are caught a bit between a rock and a hard place. And by that I mean, on the one hand, we compete with renewables, which, understandably so, are subsidized up to the level where they become competitive. And then we turn around and then we're competing with historically low coal prices. And that's part of the explanation, of course, as you touched upon, for this very weak market. Now, where will this take us? I think if I focus on Europe, I personally believe that they're facing a choice between coal or climate. It's very difficult to reaching their long-term emission targets without addressing coal. If you address coal, and even if you assume the most optimistic growth rates for renewables, you still need something to fill the gap when coal disappears, and that role very naturally falls to natural gas. On the optimistic note, there is also, I think, a challenge in the speed that renewables are growing at. It's growing slower, maybe, than what it needs to, if it is to achieve the both the internal EU targets and the long-term Paris targets. And if you look at parts of Europe, or let me rephrase that, Europe differs country by country when it comes to the political willingness and how easily they can afford to substitute or introduce renewables. Then maybe last comment linked to long term. There is an increasing discussion regarding the heating and cooling sector. Traditionally, a sector which has, I wouldn't say it means the same as transport for oil, but gas has had in Europe a very dominant position. That is currently being discussed. This is slightly more than the medium-term outlook, but even so, I'd like to mention it because I get the feeling that electricity here is considered clean and cleaner than gas. That is not the case in most European countries. In most European countries, electricity, because of the current production portfolio, is dirtier than gas. And it's certainly more expensive. So on that note, I am slightly more optimistic on the long-term prospects for natural gas than I am on the medium term, which we very much share your views on that.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. I'm really quite keen to hear your reactions to what you've heard, but I think the audience have had a lot of talking heads, and I'd like to bring you into this conversation, if I may. But do hold your thoughts and your reactions to what you've heard from folks in the industry. Now, clearly, there's a whole set of issues here around supply and demand, whole set of issues about infrastructure and the capability that's being developed within Europe, and also where imports are coming from in the future, and there's a whole set of issues around decarbonisation and the issues around how do we move, how do we use some of this analysis in terms of market and forecasting towards a transition towards a decarbonised world at some stage in the next 30 years. So, colleagues, put your hands up, say who you are, and if your question's targeted to any particular person on this panel, I'll take a group of three to begin with. So there's a gentleman at the back, there with grey hair, with a hand up first, then yourself here with the glasses, and the lady there with the red top. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Stefan Singer, WWF International. Thanks, Fatih, as usual, for a very interesting and eloquent presentation. I just have a question to you and also to the other gentlemen representing the gas interests. If we talk about decarbonization, then gas, to be honest, has no role to play. Yes, you might say gas is low carbon, but it's high carbon compared to renewables. What we have seen in the past is a threat of lock-in, and the IEA had eloquently elaborated to the issue of the threat of lock-in into high carbon coal infrastructure. Do we not see the same danger, albeit on a lower level, with gas infrastructure, a lock-in? I'm saying that one. I'm not disputing the role, nor do we as NGO, the role of fossil gas as playing an intermediary role to transition towards renewables. But if we take the Paris Agreement, the objectives of Article 2 serious, if we take that serious, it asks for staying well below 2 degree temperature change and pursuing efforts to not exceed 1.5 degree. If you translate that one into a carbon budget, what is allowed to emit in terms of carbon dioxide levels? What the IPCC has done, thankfully, then you see that the role or the potential for so-called low-carbon fossil gas is very low. We don't have the space. That's basically a physical evidence. And Fatih, I refer to your 450 ppm scenario, what you have done over the years, thankfully, in comparison to the other scenarios you have been doing. And then I'm saying that your 450 ppm scenario, which is just a 2 degree scenario, not well below 2 degree, I'm not blaming you for that one, but I think it is very useful. And we see that within that scenario, for Europe in particular, The gas supply is going down 15-20% by 2030-2040. So there's no room for increase. So now, if we imply, and that's my question to you, Fatih, if the IEA plays a role in the future advising and leading the OECD on climate change and sustainable energy policies, you might want to adapt and refresh your 450 ppm scenario in compliance with what the Paris Agreement had asked for. Right? That would mean an even further decline in the case of Europe for natural gas. Okay. Again, I think it's important. Let me finish it. One point to Mr. Ristori. You said that what we have seen in the U.S. was a huge success of gas, shale gas in that respect, replacing coal. With all respect, Mr. Ristori, if you look at the scientific literature, I'm happy to send this to you, that's wrong. There are many other factors which have contributed to the CO2 emissions reduction and coal decline in the U.S., not necessarily, although it played a role, of shale gas. Second thing is that what is entering the literature now and the observation is a huge peak in methane emissions coming from the U.S. continent, very likely from unaccounted for, not measured and not mitigated methane emissions from diffuse sources of shale gas, unfortunately. So I think we need to look into the full cycle of natural gas, or fossil gas, as I referred to say, not only of shale, and then we tend to ignore the upstream emissions, also with conventional fossil gas, I just mentioned Russia here, which are not accounted for when comparing, in many cases, gas to coal when combusted. And I know the IEA has worked on methane emissions upstream, and you proposed issues on that one. I think that's very important. We need to look at the full picture here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing an alternative perspective and stirring the pot effectively. Now, gentleman over here, Niklas.
Thank you very much for the possibility just to have a discussion here. I'm representative of Naknaftogaz here, director of the office, Naknaftogaz from Ukraine. And my question is to Mr. Birol, and perhaps Mr. Ristori also will echo some questions on that. Years ago, approximately 10 years ago here in Brussels, I met your predecessor, Claude Mandil, here. And he knew very well the situation in Ukraine and about coal. We were talking about coal. And one of his points was never reject the available source of energy in your hands. So I think that we should not blame coal as it is, but we should think about what are the technologies to be used. And my question is whether it is possible to compare advanced technologies of using coal versus the gas. Are they competitive? At what price can be they competitive? And at the same time, the second question which can be heard, is there anything wrong with the use of coal, advanced coal technologies in Germany? Do they contradict or are they faithful to the commitments proclaimed in Paris? Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, sir. Lady there. The lady there in the red.
Hi, good morning. My name is Manon Dufour. I work for E3G, and my question is for Mr. Fatih Birol again. Thanks a lot for the excellent presentation. I really liked your point about how, explaining how gas cannot be seen in isolation because of the competition from coal and renewables. I was just surprised to not hear you talk a bit more about the impact of energy efficiency. I know the IEA is doing a lot of good work on it, and I think you were the first one to coin the term first fuel. In the European context, it's for me it's extremely relevant. I mean, I think we can all agree, or most of us can agree, that coal has to go in Europe, but the impact on gas is really going to be dependent on how much renewables and efficiency we have, because basically the envelope is going to shrink, even if gas use. The gas as a fossil fuel increases, the envelope for thermal generation is going to shrink. So I wondered if you had any specific findings on this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So what I'm going to take the first three, as I said. I will bring others in, don't worry. And my plea to all my panelists is to keep your answers short. That way we can get as much through the conversation and discussion as possible. But rather than, I know lots of questions are directed towards yourself, but what I would like to start off is actually take an industry response, if I may, to what you've heard, because I think that would be helpful. Because Stefan raises the point about actually, some of the targets that are set, the the interpretations of the Paris Agreement are not fully being realized in the analysis and using the appropriate technology, for example, also as we move forward. And I'm directed to you particularly because you were talking about gases being low-hanging fruit. How would you respond to Stefan?
First, thank you for the question. I don't know whether it was a question or a statement. What I can tell you is that, well, first, we agree on the fact that gas is a fossil energy, but that, as you have said, it's a less carbon energy than other fossil energy. Second answer, I'm very skeptical about the possibilities to reach the COP21 objectives without gas, without natural gas. I think that it's an illusion to think that tomorrow the renewable, the energy world will be renewable or maybe electrical or not. I think that the future energy world will be a combination, a cocktail, a smart cocktail of various energy. Third, my conviction is that gas can accompany the renewable energies and can facilitate the enter of renewable energies in grid system, because renewable energies have several characteristics which has to be corrected, to be in balance, intermittence, for instance. And I think that the gas is today the best solution to bring the support the renewable energies need to develop themselves. I'm not a crystal ball, so sure. It's impossible for me to tell you what will be the energy world in 2050. What I mean is only to be convinced, that gas has a very large play to roll right now.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Let me turn to Rune. The point that was made by our colleague from Ukraine, I directed to you because you made a point about coal. What's your response to what you've heard about could we do things differently with coal? And also, what's happening in Germany? A perspective from you on that.
On Nord Stream or on coal in general?
Coal
in general. There are different coal technologies available out there. But there is maybe something to be said for what we are observing, which is different from what is possible, which is different maybe also from what we want. What we are observing is that some countries are more successful over the last years at least in reducing their emissions than others. They have typically converted from coal to natural gas. The two examples that springs to my mind is the US and the UK. I think the US just published some numbers from the Energy Administration which said something along the lines that there had been a reduction of 12% from 2005, I think it was, to 2015. UK are reducing emissions as we speak through the same conversion. Because in many ways we are where we are. I think it was, and that's partly a comment to the first question as well. It is not always a full overlap between what you want and what is possible. And in that sense, I think it was Voltaire who said some time back that one shouldn't let the best be the enemy of the good. And I think gas in that respect is pretty good.
Thank you for that comment. Dominic, do you want to just reflect very briefly on what the three questions that we've had in terms of the role gas has to play as we move forward, particularly in the context of the package, the gas package that you presented, and what, whether you think that actually from what the, some of the questions allude to is that are we setting the direction in the right pathway?
Yes. First of all, my comment regarding the first question. I have been always confident regarding the success of COP21 for two reasons. Not only because of the excellent political command of the negotiation from the French presidency in close contact with European Union, but also because of the evolution of positioning from key of economies and actors, in particular China and US. And frankly, without a massive reduction of emission due to the shift from coal to gas, probably the position of US would be different. But because of that, we had a fantastic window of opportunity to finish successfully the negotiation. But not to finish successfully the challenge, because as you know, the challenge is now more oriented to implementation. And again, regarding this aspect, I would like to take the opportunity to say how important is our model. We have not to impose our model, but our model is functioning. I explained, during many years, we have been the only pioneer of target, political target, addressing reduction of CO2, addressing renewables, addressing energy efficiency. Just after Paris, in the context of national commitment, we see now a large majority of countries going into the same direction. Not only thinking in the same way, but going into the same direction. For example, fixing national target for renewables. And in that context, we will use this opportunity in the context of all fora, bilateral and collective, regarding our external policy and energy diplomacy, in order to support these countries regarding this shift. But obviously, without the impressive shift from coal to gas, the situation would be different. Second, regarding Ukraine or Germany, we will have to reduce the coal consumption. And in order to be coherent with our main priorities, in order to reach our target regarding reduction of emission. And we will have to put in place, we will do that, the adequate policies in that regard. And let me say also, energy efficiency is an absolute priority. For different reasons, as you know, the main sectors involved are building, transport, and product. We have the most advanced legal framework for that. We will use fully clean energy technologies, and this is representing, in addition, an important economic opportunity. Look at the situation with energy efficiency and the building sector. The building are the largest consumer of energy, 40%. Second, addressing one of the main industrial sector, construction. The construction sector is the most in situation to react rapidly for the relaunch of economy, creating job and growth. And we should use fully this opportunity. I am comforted with the number of key actors, industrial actors, but also mayors, for example, committed to go in that direction, and we will strongly support these trends.
Okay, thank you very much. Fatih, if you focus simply on Stefan's question, that would be helpful.
Thank you very much. First, I have to correct something. I said Stefan Singer from Hamburg. Mm-hmm. He's from São Paulo, so Stefan, for that. Now, his question is a very good one, but I have to say a couple of things. First, no role for gas in decarbonization, he said. It is not something that I would fully agree with. Gas has a role to address the climate change, but gas alone will not bring us to a 2 degrees target. But gas has a positive role. First of all, I should remind you that we are focusing on the 2 degrees, well below 2 degrees target, but there is something extremely important in the Paris Agreement, which is emissions peak near term, so around 2020. Otherwise, we can lock in our future. So emission peak 2020 is tomorrow, to be honest with you. Mm. And therefore, I believe, as Dominic mentioned, in the United States, gas played a very important role, and in other countries, it can play an important role if it replaces coal. This is a, there's an if there. But to think that gas is a silver bullet for addressing the climate change alone will be overly optimistic as well. That I should mention that. Other thing, we had 2 degrees and we have now below 2 degrees or 1.5 degrees. To be honest with you, the difference between 2 degrees and 1.5 degrees target is not that challenge is not 25% more. Challenge is a completely different world. 2 degrees world and 1.5 degrees world, they are two different worlds, and we will be in our World Energy Outlook published in November, tell the world what does it mean for the energy world to go below 2 degrees. Mm-hmm. What are the implications of that? And I think, to my knowledge, it will be the first time. I would very much like to tell something to, again, IEA advising the OECD countries. We are not only advising the OECD countries. We are advising all the governments of the world. Dominic mentioned the Clean Energy Ministerial, a very important, extremely important formation of the 24 countries, including China, India, Brazil, Russia, South Africa, United Arab Emirates. Last week in San Francisco, they have assigned International Energy Agency as the home of the Clean Energy Ministerial and pushing all these programs, including the energy efficiency, as the, our third speaker mentioned, our colleague over there. Moving to coal, the colleague from Ukraine. To be honest with you, one thing which we have allowed in the energy debate, which I try to, as much as I can, listen myself is the, I don't know if you say it in English, dogmatism. Do you mm-hmm. say it in English? Dogmatism. So, it is a, for example, coal use in my view, in a European country, and coal use in India, coal use in Ukraine, in my view, they have different contexts. Even though 1 ton of CO2 going to coal to atmosphere from, I don't know, from Berlin or from New Delhi, or somewhere else has the same effect overall. Why do I say so? In today, in India, 250 million people have no electricity. Zero. And do you know what does it mean, not the electricity? It is not only in the light. It is the, you cannot put the medication for your children in the refrigerator. So simple. And if Indian use coal, the cheapest option is coal, then we have to think twice. Either we have to find ways to, for them to go for better options, natural gas, renewables. India has a major program for solar now. Mm. It will be much better. But we have to put these things in a different context. And Ukraine, if a country is in a survival mood, it's a different story than another country in Europe. So I believe we have to put this in a context, and we should not forget the issue of carbon capture and storage when we look at the long term. One thing on energy efficiency, because I couldn't remember the name of the lady in red, as you mentioned, Mr. Moderator, an excellent point. Energy efficiency for the IEA is the first fuel. The reason that there is less room for gas and the others is that energy efficiency keep the growth under control. And for us, for the IEA, this is the very first fuel is the energy efficiency. In our fight against climate change, 2 degrees or well below 2 degrees, energy efficiency is the very first option that we have to pick up. So therefore, I fully agree with the lady over there. And we have to do the following. We have 2 major policy options: renewable energies and energy efficiency. And unfortunately, in some cases, there are some difficulties between them. Sometimes increasing energy efficiency may create problems for renewable energy to increase market share. And the higher share of renewables may have implications for energy efficiency. So therefore, IEA is going to organize a major workshop in September, how to integrate best renewable and energy efficiency policies so that they don't create problems for each other, but they support each other. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. In terms of don't be dogmatic, be adaptive and contextual in your response to this particular agenda is what I take from what you've just said. Colleagues, some hands were up already. The gentleman here in the brown jacket. Can you and then other hands. Gentleman over there in the blue jacket with the glasses. Any colleagues at the back? You're a bit quiet. Ah, excellent. Brilliant. I'll stand up so I can see you. Lady there with the blue top. So, firstly, say who you are and who your question is directed to, please.
Nawab Khan from the News Agency of Kuwait, Guna. Mm-hmm. Mr. Birol, in your address, you spoke of rebalancing of the oil market. So my question is that do you see the trend of the rising oil prices continuing, and where will the prices be by December? And related to that, also the gas prices. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Gentleman over there.
First of all, congratulations to the IEA for producing this timely report for the fifth time running. It's very useful to the market because it gives us an insight as the market develops, and also I think contributes a lot to lessening insecurity as far as fuels are concerned. My question to primarily to the IEA and to the industry representatives here is, given the fact that as we go along, gas, as it came back very clearly out from your report, is going to be the main complementary fuel as we move to our transition to the post-oil era, when do you foresee that gas markets will reach the level of today's oil markets as far as marketability, tradability, mobility, and access to the consumer? Will it be in 5 years, 10 years? Do you see a direct comparison? And sorry, I didn't mention my name, Kostis Stambolis from the Institute of Energy, Southeast Europe. Thank you.
Thank you. Lady at the back.
Hi, my name is Fatima Sadouki. I am a journalist for the Middle East Economic Survey. My question is for Dr. Birol. You mentioned that there was a drop in investment in LNG export capacity, especially this year. Is there any view on what this might, what impact this might have on the future supply and demand balance? Do you expect any supply tightness at some point? What time frame, and how long would it take the industry to respond to any sign of supply tightness in the future? Thank you.
Given timing, and this is probably going to be the last cohort of questions I'm going to be able to take, I'll take a couple more questions. Gentleman here.
My name is Mansouri. I am from Iran. And I just want to emphasize on one missed point of your conference and the speakers, that Iran, with its capacity in the gas reserves as the second supplier, the capacity of supplying gas to the world, and as it can provide the current demand of EU for near one century. But I cannot hear the name of Iran during the speaker's points, and also I cannot read it in the report of IEA that Iran has a capacity to provide the gas market of EU. And without Iran, I think there would be no security and no market competency that emphasized during the speeches here. And this is my question, why it is missed in the speeches?
I will ensure you have your answer, sir, if we can muster an answer. Any more? I'll take one more. From the back, lady at the back with the glasses.
Hello, Alyssa Carbonell from Reuters. You spoke a lot about changing environment in Europe. Do you think that Russia and Gazprom are changing their strategy enough to hang on to market share at the moment? And do you think that there should be a different approach to emerging markets for oil majors to invest in infrastructure in order to have a place to absorb more LNG oversupply?
Can you just repeat the first part of what you said? We got the second part about, you know, whether we should have a different approach to emerging markets. What about the first point you made about Russia in particular?
About Russia?
Mm-hmm.
About Gazprom's changing strategy or potentially changing strategy in Europe, and the report talks about market share. Mm-hmm. So is it going to be able to hold on and defend its market share in Europe?
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Should we start with a whole bag of questions to you in the first instance, and then we can broaden this out? We've got, obviously, if we start with that, the implications of Russia and market share and what we do in relation to the changing nature of the relationship with Russia in that regard. You've got the question of there's something here about you being a crystal ball gazer to a certain extent, which is a really difficult one, about you've got the question about the rebalancing of the market. You've got the question about the relationship between oil and whether oil, what the role that oil's played, will the same happen to gas, and at what stage will that happen, if you think that's possible for us to consider. So if you take those bunch of questions around, you know, rebalancing the market, the relation between oil and gas in particular would be helpful.
So thank you. Before I will give very brief answers and so that my colleagues can also contribute, and I'm here half an hour. I will be happy to discuss with the colleagues in depth. But I wanted to compliment something that Dominic mentioned a few minutes ago. The role of U.S. in the climate change negotiations, which was helped by the gas replacing coal, therefore the emissions when they sit on the table, was much lower than they were 10 years ago. Now, a bit of the diplomacy of the climate change summit in Paris, European Union was the champion of fight against climate change many, many years. So we have to be very clear on that. China came very strongly and, in my view, unexpectedly strong in a constructive way. But the U.S. critical role in the climate change deal happening is something we all have to note. I think a few years later from now, we will all here remember the Obama administration's very positive role, game-changing role in Paris. We are now collecting memories for the future, what the Obama administration did. So I think we have to put it, I just wanted to put it on record, the role of Obama administration finding a solution for climate change. Now, coming to the, what will be the oil price in December, so by law, I cannot predict the prices, and this is difficult, but what we see is that for two reasons, we expect in the next months to come an upward pressure on the prices. One, demand is growing in a healthy way. Second, U.S. oil production is declining because of the low oil prices. Plus, Dominic mentioned the oil security. We are seeing a lot of oil-producing nations shutting down their production. In Canada, we had wildfires. In Nigeria, we have serious security issues. And in other countries, Venezuela and others, we have seen production going down. As a result, we expect prices to go up. And in terms of gas prices, as I said, in the next 4 or 5 years, we think the gas prices will be still under pressure and don't expect a big increase. We have our colleagues from the industry here. I apologize for telling this to them, but it will be, in my view, too optimistic to expect the gas prices will go up substantially in the next years to come. Now, in terms of the, perhaps coming to my colleague from Iran, you are right. Iran has huge reserves, both gas and oil, and I think everybody is waiting after the sanctions are lifted, Iran to come back to the markets. Oil is that way. But to be honest with you, to have reserves is something else. To have production and export is something different. The link between those is that you have to find investment and get the reserves out under the ground. So for the main task for Iran is today to find investments to get the technology in. And in order to do that, Iran has to come up with investment financial terms, which is interesting for the domestic Iranian companies as well as international lenders. The colleague from MIS asked the question of the natural gas in Middle East, if I am not wrong. Yes, I think in Middle East will be one of the drivers of the natural gas demand growth. Huge, again, in the Gulf countries, a lot of reserves, but the usage is very low, and I would expect, especially Saudi Arabia, making a big push for the demand growth, because in Saudi Arabia today, about one-third of the electricity generation is coming from fuel oil, which is economically very, very bad deal, I can tell you. Leave aside the environment and so on, economically a very bad deal, and I expect that fuel oil will be replaced by natural gas, which will reduce the carbon footprint. But also it is good for the economics of Saudi Arabia. And one question from Mr. Stambolis, and and the Russia question. Mr. Stambolis is right. Oil is a global commodity now. Gas is not yet there. But gas is moving there as a result of the LNG, mainly. Countries like U.S., Australia, but Norway is also one of the countries which are being a traditional, reliable supplier of gas, as well as other countries, Qatar, and this will definitely go in the direction of globalization of the markets, and it will have also implications on the contractual terms, the growing, the LNG, and being more flexible. In terms of the question coming from the, our colleague from Reuters, and as you say, Mr. Moderator, lady in white this time, the question is, the answer is, yes, I think the when we said 6 years ago, we were the first one, that a silent revolution is starting in North America in terms of shale gas. That silent revolution became now loud in terms of shale gas, and at that time, some key producers deny that this will have a future, shale gas. I think this phase, I understand, is over now. The second phase is those major exporters need to, if they want to keep their market share, they have to look at their pricing practices in order to be able to competitive and have the market share that they would like to have. So without adapting the new strategy, I think there will be very difficult times to keep that market share. And I stop here.
Thank you very much. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to wrap up and I'm going to ask our panelists for some final parting shots, if I may. So firstly, starting with you, Rune. Final commentary for you in terms of what you've heard so far, reflections on the report. Perhaps you do want to make a comment on Nord Stream 2 as your parting comment.
I probably won't. Reflection so far is that I think both myself and Statoil as such are very much in agreement with this report that we've seen today. That might not be surprising since this is midterm and most infrastructure investments are done and most of the demand is locked, maybe apart from some emerging countries and China. Where we might have some differences is maybe on the power sector in the US, where we are still, or coal substitution, I should say, where we see more potential maybe than in your report. But knowing who's now come up with a new report, I'm sure we'll revisit our results and check if they still hold water.
Is it likely to dramatically change your strategic approach over the next 5 years as a result of what you've heard? Or is it going to be...
No, I don't think so. We are primarily, from a gas point of view, either a shale gas producer in the US or a pipeline exporter in Europe. And as a pipeline exporter, I think we have a very competitive situation where we, at least midterm, with existing investments, are in a very solid position to cope with more than one surprise.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to turn to Philippe. Very brief final reflections from your perspective.
Thank you. Well, first, I would like to call to realism and not to dogmatism. What we think within my company is that one more time, gas is a player of the energy transition. Not alone, as that has been clearly said, it's not probably the silver bullet, but we have to think about a new mix of energy, a cocktail between a low-carbon fossil energy like natural gas and renewable energies, which are probably the energies of the future, but I don't know when the very future starts. Well, the second idea is that, I find that the results of the study you have just presented are encouraging for Gas Natural. This study shows that there is growth perspective everywhere, almost everywhere in the world, with very distinct situation depending on the regions and the country. And I would add that gas has trumps which are not used today, which are not identified, which are not recognized. So what is our conviction is as a utility company is to participate in the energy transition, which is one of the pillars of our new strategy, and using gas as a part of this movement.
Thank you. Turning to you, there's been a lot of commentary about the EU gas package. I'm not suggesting that you deal with all the kind of fallout from it or the kind of criticism of it, but I'd be interested in the point about digital, if you can reflect on your partnerships about the role digital has to play as we look ahead, because it's been missing in this conversation, but I can't imagine it won't be quite a driver in some respects.
We will manage definitively a new bridge between energy union and digital market. And let me say mainly for three reasons. First of all, in order to improve the situation regarding the management of the grid. We need a more efficient grid. Mm-hmm. We need to reduce losses and waste of energy, and incorporating more information and communication technologies in the day-to-day work of TSO will be extremely important in that regard. Second reason, security. As you know, energy and gas have a lot of critical infrastructure. And without ensuring this new link between digital market and energy union, it will be impossible to ensure the adequate level of protection, including, of course, cybersecurity, but not only cybersecurity, including the protection of critical infrastructure and a new capacity to detect at an early stage any incident affecting, in particular, the management of the grid and to intervene more rapidly. And the third reason is a new opportunity, a first opportunity, I can even say, to put the consumer at the center of the scene, using two things, the regulatory framework and new technologies. And it is the time to do that. Let me also, regarding gas, insist on our positioning regarding how to reduce our dependence. And for that, we insist on three directions. First, the best use of LNG, offering a lot of new opportunities with competitive market, liquid market, and new producers. We are the main importer in the world, and we should take advantage of these facilities, including new progress regarding infrastructure, in particular floating terminal. Second, acceleration of the Southern Corridor. I mean the Caspian gas arriving from Azerbaijan to Europe to Italy, then passing through Turkey. This is extremely important. We made impressive progress in the recent past, and we will pay attention also to Iranian reserve. We have opened an important dialogue with Iran regarding not only gas, but also all other aspects, oil, renewables, energy efficiency. And the last point is Mediterranean area, because as you know, we have in Africa a quasi tragic situation, and we should help Africa as soon as possible. 700 millions of Africans have no access to energy, in particular electricity. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Africa is full of energy. Not only solar or hydro, with big rivers as Congo, Nile, Niger, but also gas in Egypt. In Zohr, 800 billion cubic metrics. In Cyprus, in Israel, in Morocco now, we have some new discoveries. And we should use all of these three pistes in order to reduce our dependency and to open the gas market.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Last but not least, closing remarks from yourself, Fatih.
Thank you very much, and I talk a lot. I will just make very brief three comments. One about the industry. And coming back to, since it is, I think, perhaps 7-8 years I came to Friends of Europe, and I want to make some reference to three previous meetings here. One, 5 years ago, when President the World Energy Outlook, I said, 5 years ago, it means 2011, if any company, energy company, oil, gas, coal, renewables, believes that the climate change policies will not have effect, will not affect their strategies, they are making a very big strategic mistake. And some of them made this mistake, and some of them we see in which situation they are. And some of the companies I am seeing now, oil and gas companies, are adapting their strategies. some of them in the quickly, some of them slowly, for the climate change. Climate change is here, will be with us many years, climate policies. There is no question about the destination of travel. The question is the pace of the travel and which we wanted to, in fact, accelerate. This is number one about the companies. About European Commission. So again, 3 years ago with Dominic and Mr. Oettinger, I said, perhaps jokingly, we as the IEA, we make a lot of analysis, nice charts with lots of colors, as you see here, and make policy recommendations. But the Commission is doing the real job on the ground. And to be honest with you, with all sincerity, they are making an excellent job from energy security to climate change, from climate change to energy efficiency. We will be, and Dominic, continue to support your activities and know that your experiences are a very good source of inspiration. I use this word, source of inspiration for our work. Number two. Number three, this is for the European Commission. Number three, about the natural gas itself. I think natural gas position is different than coal, different than renewables. It will be very important to make use of natural gas advantages it can bring us meaning people who are fighting climate change, people who are fighting against the energy poverty in Africa and in India. And with the help of the governments, we can reduce the cost of natural gas for the consumers, as we have seen in many examples. So natural gas is a part of the solution if it is used in a smart way, if the policies are put forward in the right way, as we have seen in the United States, and hopefully we will see in other countries of the world. But once again, natural gas cannot bring us to our 2 degrees trajectory.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, that's it for us. I hope you found this useful, interesting, effective, provides resources in terms of your thinking as you move ahead, but also some of the policy implications for your organizations and what you might do either as a business or a public body. We know that we live in an increasingly unpredictable world. I was struck by your last slide where, you know, the financial investment decisions are zilch so far this year. And the one thing that occurs to me is the question that I should have posed earlier is that knowing what we know now and the world that we've been through in the past 5 to 10 years, how do we significantly change our approach to the next 10 years? And perhaps that's the source of a discussion that we should have at another Friends of Europe debate. But actually, how do we learn lessons from the choices and the investment decisions we've made in the past 10 years to guide how we get to 2015? So that's it from us, colleagues. I want to bring to your attention that we have this event coming up. Related to a certain extent to some of the conversation we've had today, 21st of June, on the road to 2030, decarbonising Europe's road transport sector, a related topic. You're all welcome to come, obviously, and it'll be in the same context of good speakers and a good debate. Thank you very much, and enjoy tea and coffee after here. Let's thank our speakers for providing us very good food for thought.